This is Marketplace from APM. I'm Kai Rizdal. The State Department said last week that the United States has admitted about 8,000 Syrian refugees so far this fiscal year and could possibly top the 10,000 that President Obama has set as the goal by the end of this month, also which is the end of fiscal year 16. Marketplace's Tracy Samuelson has been following the refugee process, how they get here, how they wind up in one city or another, and who they are. Last week, she introduced us to a Syrian family, newly arrived, and the community group that has taken on a lot of the work supporting them. Today, the next piece of that puzzle, building a new life here. Here's Tracy.
Ali and Fatima have been in the U.S. about 6 weeks now. They're living in Connecticut, a state they'd never heard of back in Syria. And their family of five has just become a family of six. Fatima was pregnant when they arrived, so they now have four kids. The oldest is 4 years old, the baby just 3 days old.
Hi.
Good to see you. Congratulations.
Terry Schmidt, Don Quinn, and a couple other members of the community group helping to resettle the family arrive. Spreadsheets in hand.
So what we're going to do is try to talk about budget.
We all sit on donated couches around a glass coffee table. Ollie's four-year-old daughter takes my heels from the mat by the door and starts prancing across the floor in them.
Well, these are the months.
Yes.
Those are the months. Okay. This is what you're spending your money on.
The biggest item? Rent. Roughly $1,300 a month for a three-bedroom, two-bath, basement-level apartment in West Hartford, Connecticut. The next biggest item is food. For that, the group's budgeted about $1,000 a month.
The question is that what you're really spending? How much are you spending on food?
The other big question is income. Refugees each get $925 from the State Department when they arrive. They can sign up for cash welfare and food stamps, Medicaid. And in this case, the community group has fundraised about $7,000 to help pay rent and other expenses. But very quickly, the spreadsheet shows the family in the red. Right now, Ali is in language classes during the day. In Syria, he was a teacher, and he'd like to teach again, but his English is very limited. He says it was better before the war, but for the last few years, it's like his memory's been frozen.
Does he feel comfortable telling me why he left Syria?
The group's translator steps in.
He said it's because of the war that was happening there. The house where he lived is now occupied by some militias that are pro the regime, so they are fighting with the Assad forces. And a lot of the property of his family were also either destroyed or also occupied. So he cannot live there anymore. So he witnessed, or at least he said, we knew that they killed other people.
Besides language, the other thing that complicates Ali's job search is this back injury that bothers him. He was riding a motorcycle when a plane dropped a bomb that sent him and his bike flying. Even so, he says he's game for painting work or tiling or laundry, all job leads generated by the group. But the timing, here's Terry again.
This is me. I would rather have Ali concentrate on language through August. So at the end of August, maybe be doing the interviews.
But another member of the group keeps asking Ali when he thinks he'll be ready for work. Ali mentions the injury, but then also says right away, this weekend even. He keeps telling the group he wants to work. And the refugee resettlement program in the U.S. is designed to push people into work as soon as possible.
Our emphasis is so strongly on getting refugees who are able to work into work immediately.
Kathleen Newland is a senior fellow at the Migration Policy Institute. She says that approach has lots of advantages.
In that the labor force is often a very effective engine of integration, but on the other hand, it means that people are not able to pursue recognition of their professional qualifications, if they have any, or to complete their education if they've been close to getting a degree.
Thank you. It was nice meeting you.
Thank you.
After an hour and a half long budget conversation, the community group leaves, except for Don Quinn. We sit for a while and just watch Ollie's daughter try and walk. And then Ali asks the translator to tell Don He doesn't want the group to think he doesn't want to work or that he's happy sitting around all day. And he's really nervous about being able to support his family.
Ali is really extremely worried that he might not be able to make enough money when he is on his own, when everything stops, so he can afford the living. The rent is very expensive here.
It is.
The group is supposed to phase out any rental and financial assistance around the six-month mark, if not earlier. But Don tries to assure Ali that doesn't mean they won't be there for him and his family.
There won't come a day where all of a sudden that we're gone.
She tells him, "You can't get rid of me." I'm Tracy Samuelson for Marketplace.